You're listening to Side Hustle Pro, the podcast that teaches you to build and grow a side hustle from passion project to profitable business. And I'm your host, Nikayla Matthews. So let's get started. Welcome back to the show. This is Nikayla, and this is episode 33 of Side Hustle Pro. I am super excited to get into today's episode with a woman I admire and respect a great deal, Christina Brown of lovebrownsugar.com. Before we get into the episode, quick message from our sponsor. Support for this podcast is brought to you by Master the Gram. Master the Gram is the ultimate Instagram course for business owners who want to attract their true fans and turn them into loyal, returning customers. In a series of four modules, plus a bonus module, you will learn how to leverage Instagram to grow your brand, drive traffic to your site, and increase your income. To register, visit sidehustlepro.co/masterthegram. Now, let's get into it. Today in the guest chair, we have style blogger and digital media expert, Christina S. Brown, founder of the fast-growing style and beauty destination, lovebrownsugar.com, mommy destination, babybrownsugar.com, and digital empowerment community, Brown Girls Love, not to mention Shop Love Brown Sugar. She's been recognized everywhere from the New York Times to People Style Watch as a top lifestyle expert and is known for curating platforms for multicultural women with an emphasis on self-empowerment. Christina has been heralded as a 30 under 30 style maven by HelloBeautiful.com, a top 40 style blogger by Essence Magazine, a Black Enterprise Blogger Month honoree, and a Wharton Magazine Social Media Watchlist honoree. So, welcome to the show, Christina. Tell us more about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, my main site and what most people know me for is Love Brown Sugar. So it's a style and beauty site that's geared towards women of color. And I really started it out of a need and necessity that I saw. I wanted to see more positive representations of women of color in the media. And I saw there was a huge lack of that. I was surrounded by all these amazing women of color who are doing big things and who are absolutely beautiful, setting trends and just doing so much. And I just didn't see that in the media, in magazines, on TV or anything. So I said, well, why don't I try and use my own platform to show more people, that we are beautiful, that we are confident, and that, we have a lot more going on to us than just looks. That was basically the premise behind Love Brown Sugar. And since it's grown to so many different places, I have different platforms now. And so one of the main things I'm working on right now is really expanding my brand and making sure that people know the different things that I do and how they differ from each other. Because I think that is one of the areas that I could grow a little bit more as far as educating people on, Love Brown Sugar is for this, Baby Brown Sugar is for that, Brown Girls Love is for that. So yeah, that's kind of what this year is about. 2017 is a year of expansion for me.
Oh yes. Now, I always like to take it back, right? So how do you think your upbringing influenced your entrepreneurial drive?
Yeah, it's so funny. I was raised by two working parents. And so both my parents worked 9-to-5 jobs, never really had kind of an entrepreneur to look up to. When I was younger, for the most part, my parents were working regular jobs and they still work regular 9-to-5 jobs. But that said, they were always super passionate. And it's interesting, they always had side hustles as well. So both my parents were caterers when I was younger. And I remember there was a time that their catering business was so booming and they were getting so many requests that they really had to make a decision between, okay, are we going to keep this catering business going and like leave our jobs and do this full time? Or are we going to keep our jobs? And, ultimately the decision was based on our family situation to keep their full-time job because that was more stable. But I do remember growing up and seeing that and seeing that they had all these other amazing talents that they, would try to expand on, but obviously couldn't expand past a certain point because of the stability necessary to raise, our household had four kids. So, just thinking about that. Mm-hmm. But my parents worked incredibly hard and they instilled that in me. And I think that's a big piece of why I've been so successful.
That's so interesting. You started out by saying, actually, I wasn't really around, but then you're like, but wait a second, they did have side hustles.
Yeah.
And that definitely, I'm sure, seeped into your brain and had something to do with this side hustling spirit that you have. So tell us about some of the first steps you took when you were starting out with Love Brown Sugar. Like, I remember when it was just a blog on Blogger. What were the
Yep, all those
first,
years ago.
all those years ago? And when did you start taking it from idea to brand? And what were the shifts you made when you did that?
That's a good question. It definitely was a step-by-step process for me. Like most people who start their blogs, who started blogs back then, I would say I didn't go into it with the intention of building a business around it or making money from it. I went into it as this is something that I see could be really positive. I also was looking to work in editorial and I didn't have any formal editorial experience. So I also was using my blog as a portfolio for myself so that when I went out and sent my resume out to try and get magazine jobs, that they could take a look at my writing skills on my blog. So it served a few different purposes back then, but all hobbies for the most part. And so the process from, going from being a full-time, sorry, just a blogger who was doing it as a hobby to being a full-time blogger, it took a few years. And so I would say the first 4 years of my blog, I was just doing it as a hobby. And around maybe 3 years in 2012 is when I started to make a little bit of money from it. And I was like, oh, okay, this could be, something cool. Still just keeping it to a side hustle because definitely not matching up to what I make in my full-time job. And it wasn't until early 2013 when I really had to make the decision, like, I either am going to be a really horrible full-time employee because my blog is now taking up so much more of my time and I'm getting so many more opportunities from this, or I'm going to, scrap the blog, keep it a hobby, and get back to being more serious about my full-time job. And at the time, I did like my full-time job. I didn't love it. I liked it. But I loved my blog so much more. I was just like, this is an amazing tool. It gave me all this instant gratification. It was a way for me to empower people immediately with just writing a few sentences, posting a few pictures. I was like, I love that I'm able to interact with these people and do all this stuff. So let me kind of take a leap and see where it lands me. Because I'm like, I'm young. This is kind of the only time that I can really do this. I have no responsibilities outside of making sure I have a roof over my head. So that was my rationale. And I don't want people to confuse my journey with thinking that I just kind of jumped into working on my blog full time. I did have some sort of a plan before I left my job. I was making sure to put money aside. I had a little bit saved up. And also before I left my job full time, I had set up a consulting agreement with one of the companies that I was working with, just to make sure that I had like monthly income, and I wasn't kind of left cold and dry with no money to keep things going. So, it was a process, but I did some planning. I didn't just jump right into it.
Got it. Yeah, that I'm glad you
Yeah.
mentioned that because that was, my next question. I always want to know how people prepared,
Yep.
for entrepreneurship. Like, what were the financial steps you took? So it sounded like, you had an agreement, you'd save, you had a little pot, and you made the leap. So you were now you're full time on your own, kind of like Love Brown Sugar. How are you marketing and building awareness, and especially in like a oversaturated market, how are you distinguishing yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting. Even back then when I quit my job, it was 2013. That's when blogging kind of started really taking off and when people started to realize like you can actually make money from this. And I think it's around that time that the industry got super saturated, like tons of new blogs popping up left and right. And as far as marketing and promotion, I have always been a big fan of being myself, being unique, and being transparent. And I think that's what people kind of gravitated towards me and what people loved about me is that I wasn't out there trying to be somebody else. I wasn't, replicating some of the other bloggers who were doing, their own thing. I just have my own thing. You know what I mean? I have curves. I have brown skin. I love wedges. I love Kara print. Like, you know what I mean? I have my own things that I love. And so people who love those things as well, they would kind of gravitate towards me. And I think that's like the biggest piece of advice I give any blogger that's, trying to build up their own personal brand or create a business out of this is just be you. Because at the end of the day, there's really no competition when you are just being yourself, because you're the only one of you on this earth. You know what I mean? So any talents or skills that you have, people that you have like a very specific purpose to fulfill. And so I just feel like if people are reminded of that, there's less of the whole competition and there's less of a need for them to market themselves so much. Like you kind of become your own marketing machine because you're just being authentically you, and people gravitate towards the things that you do and what you love. So yeah, I would say I definitely am big on making sure that people know who I am. I always have my business cards with me, and I would go out to networking events and get my name out there. But I focused on just being myself, and I think that's very important.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly believe in that as well. Instead of overthinking it, sometimes you just have to share your journey and put yourself out there, but put in the things you want to put out there. Like obviously you don't have to sacrifice all your privacy to get people to follow you. But speaking of the marketing and the brand building now, I didn't originally have this as one of the questions, but I'm interested to know nowadays, like, how can you make a living as a blogger? What are the revenue streams that are just most effective these days? Because, ad banners and things like that, that's not really cutting
Yeah, it's
it.
so that's a great question. And it's so timely because it now is a time that we're seeing a lot of different influencers. And I will say influencers because there's a lot of people outside of just blogging that kind of have influence on different platforms. We see these people who are creating different income and business streams, and it's awesome and inspiring. So I actually hosted an event last weekend called Brown Girls Love Power Day, and I had some really amazing panelists on board, and we did one panel discussion called Your Influence, Your Way. And so I had these different women on who traditionally were bloggers or social media influencers and were able to create either businesses or different income streams or follow their passions just by way of like using, their influence to get there. And so for me personally, I have a few different things that I do in addition to offering like sponsored opportunities on my website. I also do a lot of brand ambassadorships. So a brand will want to tap me based on who I am and how well what I put out there fits into their messaging, and basically tap me to kind of join forces with them to get the word out about campaigns that they're doing. And so for that particular revenue stream, I'm very particular about brands I partner up with for ambassadorships, because I want to make sure obviously that my brand, my audience trusts me, and that I'm only aligning with brands that make sense for who I am. And so that's one revenue stream. I also obviously host events, like I mentioned before, the Power Day event I did last week. And then I do speaking engagements. I also do consulting. Brand consulting is a big piece of my business. And so because I've built up a specific audience and I know who that audience is and what they like, a brand might tap me to help them, launch a new product line, or to help them, launch something in a new market that I know a lot of because of having my blog and having my platforms. So yeah, I think there's so many different ways people can make money from this now, and it's really awesome and inspiring because you can kind of take whatever you've done with your social community and kind of transform that into something that makes money for you.
Interesting. So, for people who are listening who are just starting out, maybe they're 3 years into the blogging game but haven't reached that level of influence in terms of vanity metrics or anything like that, but they have an engaged community, what would you tell them? How do they approach a sponsor or pitch themselves for these brand ambassadorships?
Yeah, I think, and this is something that people are slowly kind of adapting to. When I say people, I say like the people that behind those brands are slowly coming to understand that it's not always a numbers game anymore. I don't have the most followers as some of the other influencers out here. I don't have millions of followers. I'm closer in the thousands, and I'm still able to make a good living doing this because, like I said before, I am uniquely me, and I focus on partnering with brands that fall very closely in line with what I support. So for any new bloggers or influencers out there that are looking to, you know, partner with really amazing brands, focus on who you are and make sure that you're forging relationships with brands that fall in line with what you do. Also, focus on engaging your community. So, you know, obviously you want to continue to grow your community and for more people to follow you. But for the few people that do follow you right now, make sure you're having constant conversations with them. You know, reply back to them on social media, follow them. You know, just make sure that you're kind of in the mix and that your audience gets you and you get your audience. Because I am much more, you know, as a brand, for example, I would be much more inclined to partner with someone who can give me like real metrics on, you know, the types of things that my audience purchases or, you know, the types of products that they like, as opposed to someone who has a ton of followers, but doesn't really know who they service. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or has all these followers because they're super popular. But when they say, hey, go purchase this, nobody actually listens.
Right.
So I think that's the big thing. On that same panel I was talking about, I talked about the difference between popularity and influence. Popularity means that you're super popular, lots of people follow you, and you know, you might have had a viral video, or you might be, you know, Beyonce's cousin or something like that, and so people care about you because of that. But that doesn't mean they trust your opinion. When you have influence, people trust your opinion and they make purchase decisions and life decisions based on something that you're doing. So I think as a smaller kind of up and coming, you know, blogger influencer, you should focus on building up your influence, not just your popularity.
Indeed. I so agree with that. You know, the other day, and I can relate to this so much, and it's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here, not only because, you know, for those of you who don't know, Christina is one of the people who, you know, I had a really pivotal conversation with before I started pursuing. Yeah, like I went to her Brown Girls Love Day in DC in 2015. And, you know, I had to sign up for a VIP, even though I know Christina, I paid for my VIP ticket. I said, I want my one-on-one time with Christina because I truly respect the process and the fact that you have built up this business. Just really admire you. And
thank you.
I have so much love and respect for you. So I paid for my VIP time and I sat down and, you know, the conversation we had about how I can really get back into blogging and building up my personal brand to that day really stuck with me. That was a turning point for me. So one of the things that I'm thinking about as you're talking about this is like, I was building up my media kit the other day. And as I'm like pulling numbers, you know, you always start to like compare yourself to people. You're like, who am I going to pitch? But then I really looked at the community I'm building and how much this information and this content is valued. And I'm like, I don't even really care about what this media kit says. Of course, I'll do it just for, you know, having its sake. But how do you feel about that? Like when you were first starting out, were you just like sending your media kit out there? Or after a while, did it become you forming personal relationships and the conversation starting from there?
Yeah. So in the beginning, especially when I first quit my full-time job, it was very much me trying to get myself out there and let brands know, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is who I am. Do you want to partner? Because another thing that I don't mention often, but I got pregnant with my daughter just a few, like maybe a month after I had quit my full-time job. And so mind you, I'm just losing my benefits. Like I'm losing, like having that steady paycheck. And so all these things are happening at the same time. And I was just like, listen, I have to get serious about monetizing this business. So yes, initially I sent my stuff out a lot to different brands to see who wanted to partner. And now I'm blessed in that, you know, I've worked so hard and have been so diligent that people come to me and I don't really have to pitch myself as much anymore. But I think that in the beginning, you know, I wish I had been a little bit more intentional about the types of brands and people that I was reaching out to. It's great now because lots of people know me and know who I am and know the type of things that I do. But I would have probably cut out a lot of work and like hours of emailing and phone calling if I was more strategic about the people that I wanted to reach out to based on relationships that I already had. So I really feel like it should be relationship first.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like if there's a brand you're already, you know, wearing all the time or already very supportive of because of your own reasons, just start to kind of form that relationship and engage with those people, you know, as much as possible to kind of build that up. There's no guarantee, obviously, that if you form a relationship with a brand, that they're going to support you later on, but it's just a good practice. And I think you shouldn't hold yourself back from pitching to lots of people, because I'll say this, I might pitch to, you know, 20 people back then and only two would respond. So it is like, it is kind of a numbers game. But I think if you're doing things right, you know, people will kind of come to you and will gravitate towards you based on your genuine intentions and your community.
Mm-hmm. And so, speaking of becoming a mom, it's funny you mentioned that, because I thought you were like 2 years full time already as an entrepreneur before Cadence.
No.
Came along. Wow, I didn't know that. So
no, she came along and popped up right out. I'm about to have this first baby, which is my business, and now I have a second baby.
Wow,
it was crazy.
See,
yeah,
even more reason why I have so much respect for you. So, how and when did you start to actually reap profit and rewards from your business? And then, what were the first things you invested back into the business?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's funny. I am one of those people that, I'm very big on making sure that I'm investing in my business on a consistent basis. And I would say almost to my detriment, I am now in, you know, late 2016, early 2017, just getting like a financial advisor to step in and say, okay, this is how much you need to be spending on this. And this is what you need to hold back on and things like that. Because I'm just like, I'm about growth. You know what I mean? Like, all right, if I have to spend this money to make sure this looks good, to make sure this is done with excellence, then I'm going to do it. And I'm one of those people who, you know, mistakenly would just pay myself last. Like, okay, let me pay this person and that person so I can make sure this looks good. And then whatever's left over, I'll just take the scraps. And so now I'm in a place where I'm like, okay, I have to switch this strategy around a little bit, because that's not long-term sustainable. And I also need to be making smart kind of investments and business decisions. So to your original question, I think it depends on the type of business you have, how much and what type of investment you need to make. But for me, as a blogger, you know, influencer who's very big on making sure that I look good in front of the public, I would make investments like great photography, graphic design, you know, makeup and hair if I'm doing an appearance. Like, those are the types of things that I would have to make investments in, because I always wanted to make sure I put my best face forward as a lifestyle influencer and someone who is, I consider, a curator. You know what I mean? And so people needed to look at my brand and see some sort of excellence when it came to images, video, things like that. So that's where I put a lot of my upfront investment. But if you're a food blogger, for example, you might want to invest in really, really great, you know, plates or whatever that is that makes your stuff look really, really good. You know, it just kind of depends on what you're doing.
Right.
But for me, it was definitely images and video and kind of creative direction.
Got it. And, you know, within reason, y'all, like, you don't need to be freshly made up beat every day. Only for appearances.
Every day, like, let's
do that. Like, once a week. Like, rein it in, because it's a real thing. Like, sometimes, especially I must imagine as a style blogger, that you feel you have to look good all the time. You end up spending money when it's like, wait a second, like, be strategic.
Yeah, let me scale back. Yeah. Right, exactly.
But,
and I would say you should also tap into just another quick point. You should also tap into any resources that you already have. You know what I mean? You have a best friend who does makeup and hair or whatever, hit them up and say, girl, when I start popping, I'm bringing you with me. You know what I mean? Like, barter your services, find ways to strategically partner with people so that you're not spending a ton of money up front.
Exactly. And now I want to shift a little bit into expanding and what you've done. So you've expanded. I love the fact that you're always continuing to grow your brand. Like, so Baby Brown Sugar came along as a natural extension of becoming a mom. What was your vision there when creating it?
Yeah, it's so funny. Baby Brown Sugar was just an organic extension of my Love Brown Sugar brand, because when I got pregnant with my daughter, I was like, you know, I want to find a way to kind of tell this story. And I didn't see many platforms out there that are specifically geared towards moms of color. And the difference between, I would say, my Baby Brown Sugar platform and some other mommy blogs is that it wasn't just stories from me. So it wasn't just my personal story that I was telling people about how I'm raising my daughter. My purpose for starting that was so that other people could come in and have valid voices on that platform. So it's kind of an overall storytelling platform for multicultural moms. And it was organic for me. Like, people loved it because it was an opportunity for me to share my journey from being pregnant to finally having her, the first few, issues that I had with her breastfeeding, like all these different things that I was just like, I wish I had someone to talk about this every day. I can kind of put that stuff, on the blog. So that was a natural extension for me. And I would say every business that I've created since has come out of a need or come out of people asking me certain types of questions on a consistent basis. And I'm like, okay, I need to find an outlet for this because it's different from what I originally created, and I don't want people to get confused. So yeah, that's pretty much how it evolved.
And then when it comes to things like events, we touched on financial stuff, but then when you're launching an event, like that's a lot of upfront money. How do you plan for those kind of investments?
Yes. So I would say the biggest piece of what you just said is the plan part. You do need to plan. And I have notoriously been one of those people like, oh, I want to have an event next month. Let me just do it. And that is not the way to go. You need more than 30 days if you want to plan a well-executed event. And so that's something that I've learned over time. The earlier in advance that you can plan, the better. The more money that you can save upfront before having to make that investment, the better. So, it obviously will depend on the type of event you're doing, how full scale it is, if it's a smaller kind of more intimate person-to-person event or like a big expo, it will really depend on that, how much in advance you need to plan. But I would say that if you want to do a really great event with excellence, you should start with a few basics, like, the number of people who are coming, what the purpose of the event is going to be. Is it going to be for networking, or is it going to be an opportunity for someone to tell a story or to tell their story? So those different types of events will kind of determine the investment that you make up front. I could do a whole podcast on that just in and
Right.
of itself.
I know. I need to hit you up, girl, when I'm ready to p start planning my first event. And now you've expanded into Shop Brown Sugar. Like, talk to us about Brown Girls Love first, and then Shop Brown Sugar. Like, then, yeah, how did you approach those expansions?
Yes. So Brown Girls Love, which, is just really at the core of my heart right now. I love it so much because of what it represents, right? So Brown Girls Love came because I started getting lots of questions when I quit my full-time job. I get questions from people like, oh my God, you're able to, blog full time. How are you able to do that? Or, you're so awesome doing all these things, and you're inspiring me as a woman of color, but I really want to know about like finance. Can you tell me more about that? So I started getting questions like that, and I was just like, what if I could kind of create a platform that specifically addresses this and also serves the need that I feel like is there. For young women who were like me when I was in college and didn't really quite know what they wanted to do, but they had an idea that they wanted to eventually maybe own a business or, start have their own personal brand, but have no idea like what to do to get there. And so that was the purpose of me starting Brown Girls Love, not just to be like a really fun Instagram page with dope pictures of women of color, but also offline to be an opportunity for women to network. For me to present some of my friends who are experts in different fields and have them talk, about exactly what they do and how they do it, and also an opportunity for people to learn and to grow. And so that's how Brown Girls Love was started, and it just has taken off over the past, what, 2.5, 3 years that it's been around. And so with Shop Love Brown Sugar, that actually came about because I personally had all these are really amazing Black-owned brands, so minority-owned brands, I'll say, that I loved and that I wanted to basically present my audience with options during the holiday season to shop some of these brands. And I didn't find them kind of all in one place because they were my picks, basically. And so 2 years ago, I started a physical kind of pop-up shop in New York City. I'd do it for one day and I'd invite my readers to come out and shop and support some of these brands. And people loved it so much. But the overarching kind of feedback I would get is, I'm not based in New York City. Can you bring this to my city? Or, why can't you do it in Atlanta or Detroit or like wherever, my readers were, they'd ask me to bring it there. And I'm like, girl, you know how much money this costs? Like, this is a lot of investment for me to put, to get a space and to do everything with excellence, which is a big piece of what I try to do. It was a lot of upfront investment. So I said, I can't take this on tour right now, but let me figure something out. And so this year, instead of doing the pop-up shop, I said, why don't I just do this online? You know what I mean? Why don't I launch e-commerce? I had actually interned in retail when I was in college, and I had my heart set on being a buyer at a luxury retail corporation, and it just didn't end up working out because of the recession. And so I always had my heart set on having my own boutique, but I never knew how exactly that was going to happen. And so when this opportunity came around, and I noticed that people really loved the things I was picking out, I was like, why don't I just kind of do this online and see how people react to it. And I'm just blown away by the amount of support that I've gotten over the past month, really. It launched at the end of November in 2016, and I got like over 150 orders within the first month. And things were selling out in days. Like, it just was awesome. I got featured on Teen Vogue and all these Essence and all these amazing platforms. So it just was definitely like kind of something that I was passionate about. And then I just listened to my readers and I heard what they said, and I responded, and it was successful. And I'm just like beyond excited
Wow,
and that it
congrats.
went well. Thank
So
you.
this leads me to the next obvious question, which is how are you doing all this? What is the team, that structure that you have behind you? And what's been your
Yes.
approach to hiring staff?
Yes, that's a good question. So I'll say this, I am still figuring this thing out. I don't want people to assume that because I have all these different platforms and they look great on social media and they look great when I'm talking about them, I'm still figuring things out on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's the beauty of entrepreneurship and something that you have to kind of embrace when you start your own business is that you're never going to have it all together or know everything about your business. It's a step-by-step process. But when it comes to staffing, I have definitely gone through a lot of different staff changes since just working on my blog full time. There are some people who help me out on my team who have been there for years now, some that I've just started working with and are working amazingly well, and everything is going well. So I think everyone's kind of approach to hiring people and hiring staff is going to be different. But for me, I always look for people who are really actually invested in what I'm trying to do. I look for people from my community. So I actually end up hiring a lot of people. Just, I might put something out on social media and say, hey, we're looking for writers, or hey, we're looking for an intern. And people respond with their resumes. And I have at least half of my staff right now is based on people who applied, who were following my blog and who loved it and who decided to apply, to be part of my team. So, yeah, a lot of my people come from my community. I would say biggest piece, if you are a new business, and I think this is one of the best investments you can make, is investing in either like a virtual assistant or someone to handle your administration. Because when you start like actually getting to the flow of making money, you're going to have invoices that have to be submitted. You're going to be sending out like, W-9s to all these different people, and like having to follow up to make sure you get paid. Like, all that stuff is very hard to manage when you're trying to be creative and trying to, be on the creative side of things. So I think that should definitely be the first kind of investment that you make if you are making a staff investment, is someone to help you with your overall administration. Now, mind you, that takes a bit of trust,
Yes. And
because
how
obviously,
did you figure out who to trust?
well, it's funny, my mom handles my admin. So my mom is like a master administrator. She's like a director of administrator for so she's been administrator for some really big companies, and now she works for a nonprofit, and so she's really good at that. And so I kind of tapped her to help me. And so I lucked out, I think, by having someone very close to me who could do that. But I think the trust factor is something that you kind of can develop over time. So you have to be able to give people kind of small pieces of things and then see how it evolves. Like, okay, this person is doing really, really well with this. Let me give them a little bit more responsibility. Also, you set yourself up properly and officially with contracts. So you make sure that you have like a non-disclosure clauses in any, contract that you set up with people, and so that they can't kind of steal your ideas or steal your money or like steal or steal things from you. So that's like the first thing, is get a good lawyer to come up with a contract for you that will be a basis of everything that you do with people. And then you just have those agreements so that you feel a little bit more safeguarded. But yeah, there's I don't think there's a magic formula. I think it's something that people kind of have to try out, and you're gonna have people that don't work out, that you end up having to, X out from your community or whatever, just because. And then you'll have people who work out, amazingly well. So it's a trial and error situation for sure.
I think I'm at that stage now because my inbox gives me anxiety. And I'm like, I don't think this, I'm supposed to feel this way when I open up Gmail.
I am reading this book. God, let me make sure that I get the right name for it. I think it's called Unsubscribe. I think that's the name of it. It has like a blue cover. It's one of those like newer pieces of work. But basically, it's all about like mailbox anxiety, and like basically how to properly manage your inbox. And I am like, yeah, it is called Unsubscribe. The author is Jocelyn K. Glee. So
I need to read
Glei.
this. Yes.
Yes, I'm getting into that because I'm just like, this inbox has to get under control. Like, I cannot let it control me. You know what I mean? So that it's a real thing. I understand what you're saying.
It is. And I've mentioned it in a few episodes just because it's something that I haven't quite figured out how I want to, move forward with yet. So thank you for that, tip.
No problem.
Now, before we move into the lightning round, I'd love to know how you are thinking about sustainability for the future for your business. So first, firstly, how do you continue to financially sustain yourself given how unpredictable entrepreneurship is, and especially as it relates to like health insurance and things like that, you brought up yourself, like being a mom, it's so much more critical.
Absolutely. I think what I've learned over time is if you can get any type of longevity out of partnerships, consulting, ambassadorships, anything like that, try and do it. That is really what has to sustain me the most. I'm actually blessed in that this year I'm doing an ambassadorship that spans like an entire year. So I think it's safe for me to announce it now because it's coming out in a couple weeks. But I've actually partnered with Dove, and I'm going to be in a commercial with them.
Nice,
And I'm super
congrats.
excited about that. Yeah, it's for their beauty bar, which has been like a staple in my household for years now. So I was very excited to kind of partner with them. On being a part of this campaign that they have coming out. But things like that, that allow me the opportunity to work with brands on like a longer term basis, really, I think, kind of helped set the foundation. And I mentioned this earlier on in the podcast about when I first left my job, setting up like a consulting situation, so that I could make money for at least 6 months at a time, and I know that it's coming in every single month. So I think when it comes to, automating things and making sure that you're getting consistent money, you want to forge relationships and work with people who will be willing to pay you over a certain amount of time, as opposed to just relying on one-offs. That's what I relied on, I would say, for like the first 2 years of my business, and it was just very volatile. Like, it was some months were amazing and other months were not so amazing. And that like gave me a lot of anxiety because I'm just like, I don't want it to be a situation where there's a month where I can't pay my bills, or, where certain costs are not covered. So it does take some discipline. It takes making sure that you look out for opportunities to, make money over a certain period of time. And then also, if you are in a space where, hey, this month is really, really great and next month is not going to be so great, you have to have that kind of budget set up and that self-discipline to know, okay, this month is really great, but I can't spend all of it. I have to save some for next month because I can't go broke. So it's a process, but I think anything you can do long term is better.
And what's been the most surprising aspect of being an entrepreneur?
Whew, surprising aspect is that I am not like sitting around working in my pajamas all day. Up and do work. You know, it's funny. I could sit around in my pajamas all day, but that doesn't actually make me feel good. Like, what makes me feel good is getting up, you know, taking my shower, putting my little makeup on, you know, getting my hair ready. And then I feel like I'm in work mode. You know what I mean? So I think that's the biggest thing, is that you think you're just going to be sitting around all day. And, you know, yes, I have my own schedule and I set my own everything. But at the end of the day, I do have like people that I report to. You know what I mean? Like, I have clients, and those are kind of my bosses. And then I have an audience on social media, and they're kind of my bosses because they kind of direct some of the content that I have to put out and the times that I have to do that. So, you know, yes, you are your own boss, but you do have people that you're accountable to. And another thing I'll say is that I've worked harder. I work harder now than I ever did when I worked for somebody else. And the difference now is that I just love what I'm doing so much that it doesn't necessarily always feel like work. You know what I mean? Like, I'm on this call with you right now. To most people, this is considered quote unquote work, but it doesn't feel like work to me because I'm just kind of telling my story. So yeah, I think that's what surprised me the most. I work harder now than I did before.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely. I can see that because I know when I leave for work every day, there's like 10 other things I wish I could have accomplished that morning. And I can only imagine if I had the whole day just to focus on Side Hustle Pro. But you know, future is coming.
Future, absolutely. Let's prophesy 2017 for
All right, so let's jump into the lightning round. So you know the deal, you answer the first thing that comes to mind. Are you ready? All righty. What's a resource that has helped you in your business that you can share with the Side Hustle Pro audience?
Resource that has helped me with my business, I would say FreshBooks. So I discovered FreshBooks maybe like a year and a half ago, and it really has changed my life. Because before I was kind of just invoicing people left and right, but FreshBooks is a system that kind of allows you to put everything in one place, and also allows you to see when people have seen your invoice. I can see, you know, how much money I'm making every month. So that is definitely like a huge resource for me that I think if you're interested in getting into consulting, or you know, just simply want to make sure that all of your financial stuff is in one place, that's like a really great resource.
Awesome. Number two, what's the best business book or podcast episode or even live event that you've consumed in the past year?
Oh my God, there's so many. That's so hard. Okay, so one thing I'll say for book, it's not really a business book, it's more of like a self-help book. There's this book called You're a Badass. And I'm sure most of your readers probably, your audience probably knows Mileek and Mileek's amazing podcast.
Yes,
So
yes.
I got yeah, so she's awesome. I got a recommendation to read that book from her podcast, and it has like changed my life. It's so awesome. It
Really?
really revolves around that whole idea of like the secret and like manifesting things, and basically just knowing within yourself that you can do something, and then all of a sudden you do it because you believe you can. So it's just an awesome book. I recommend everybody to pick it up because it kind of changed my life last year.
Yeah, I've been
And
meaning to
then
read it. So that is okay. That's going to be the first book for
yes, you
2017.
got to read it. It's so good. Have to. It will set your whole year on fire. Like,
Love
seriously.
it. Yes, I've been meaning it's on my list. Okay, I'm putting it at the top.
Yes. That's a big one.
Number three, what is a daily practice you use to start your day on the right note and increase your productivity throughout the day?
So something that I do every morning is pray. And that's something that I don't ever skip it because it really helps set the tone for my day. I'm a very spiritual person. I think, I believe, and I know that God has blessed me with the talents that I have so that I can really fulfill my purpose. So it's important for me at the beginning of the day to be connected with him and to talk to him and to get direction. And so that's a big piece of what I do on a consistent basis. I try to do it for at least a half an hour, you know, just spend a little bit of time in meditation and praying. Sometimes it's longer depending on my mood, but I've started to get up early so that I can do that because I notice a difference in my day, you know, when I start with prayer and when I don't.
What's another personal habit that has helped you significantly in your business?
Another personal habit that's helped me significantly, to-do lists. So there's, I actually use an app. It's called To Do, but it's spelled TEUX. DEUX. So it's like fancy to
I know, I
do's
was about to say,
like
you're
the French version.
fancy.
Yeah, so it's just a spelling that's fancy. That's really the only thing. But I like that app because it basically allows you to list out all the things that you have to do. You can kind of put them in categories. And then it keeps track of them like every single day. So as you cross things off, they don't ever really kind of disappear. So I can go back, and see some of the stuff that I've accomplished. And whatever you don't do for that current day kind of rolls over to the next day as well. So I really like the app. It's nice, it's easy to use, and it kind of helps me keep everything in one place.
Got it. And I'll link to that in the show notes. Alrighty.
Yes.
So, number five, what's your parting advice for fellow women entrepreneurs who want to be their own boss but are worried about losing that steady paycheck?
Good one. I would say parting words, have faith. You know what I mean? And have faith is a big piece of it because at the end of the day, if you don't really believe that you can do something, then you're not going to do it. And it kind of goes back to that whole what I was talking about earlier with The Secret and that book and all of that. Like you have to believe in your heart, like I can do this. And then when once that seed is planted and you actually put like the work towards it, it happens. So I think that's the biggest piece. And another thing that is one of my mantras moving forward is just start with love. You know what I mean? Just make sure that everything that you're doing, that you do it with passion, and that is coming from a place of, I love to do this and I know this is going to help people. Because anytime you do things based on your passion and what you really, really care about, the money just comes. And that's kind of what has happened with my business. I've started different, side hustles from my like original hustle. And they all were born out of like a special place in my heart. And they've somehow have found a way back to funding me and allowing me to start new things. So I think that's a big piece of it. Start with love, everything else will follow.
Amen. That is an awesome note to end on. So let us know what's the best way that we can connect with you after this episode. Everybody get your pens ready for Christina's multiple Instagram accounts and emails.
Oh my God, so many. It's horrible.
Yes.
Well, I would say the main one is Love Brown Sugar, and I'm Love Brown Sugar everywhere. And I pretty much link to all of my different pages from my Love Brown Sugar pages. So you can find me on Love Brown Sugar. For anyone who's interested in empowerment, women's empowerment, personal branding, entrepreneurship, you can follow us on Brown Girls Love. And Brown Girls Love is only on Instagram, and we're just this year we're gonna roll out a Facebook page. But right now we're just on Instagram. And there's Baby Brown Sugar, which is everywhere. And Shop Love Brown Sugar doesn't have its own pages yet, so you can still kind of just follow us on Love Brown Sugar. But yeah, that's pretty much
All
it.
right, got it. Okay, so thank you so much, Christina, for joining us in the guest chair today. It has been a pleasure. Love the gems that you dropped. And yeah.
Thank you.
All right,
Thank you
guys.
so much for having me.
Of course. And there you have it. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to Side Hustle Pro. If you want to hear more from me, head on over to sidehustlepro.co/sidehustlecorner to get my weekly Side Hustle Diaries chronicles about my own journey from passion project to profitable business. And if you want to find me online, I'm at Side Hustle Pro on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Don't forget to join the Side Hustle Pro Facebook community. Go to sidehustlepro.co/mastermind. And as always, if you love the show, do me a favor and subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.